But here we go. I appreciate each of you staying around today to listen to this presentation. This is a good bit different than most of the presentations you've heard this week. This isn't going to be a herbicide evaluation. This is going to be essentially looking at the potential for movement of weed seed using GenTrash. And tell you a little bit what essentially led to this is, if you take a look at the glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth issues we had, Ken Smith and I got together, and it was Ken's idea, and I guess, like I said, I bought into it, that potentially that we may be moving a good many of our herbicide-resistant weeds via GenTrash. And then also I had spoken, I guess, about a year ago, year and a half now, to a couple of gen operators. They had called me in the sense that they had spread some GenTrash in. They weren't having pigweed issues until they spread some GenTrash on some fields. And next thing you know, they had pigweed they couldn't control. So that kind of led to this. And I appreciate Larry Steckel. Larry has sent in some samples that we're going to cover today. And then Trey Koger sent in a few samples also from Mississippi. And thus, this is kind of a collaborative effort across states. But when you look in at Arkansas, it's pretty common to see things like this as you drive through the state. Little patches of weeds through the fields. This, of course, is Palmer amaranth. This is resistant Palmer amaranth. But again, we see other weeds in addition to this coming through the canopy late in the growing season. And of course, with that, as you run a picker through the field, you pick this lint, you're going to have some of the seed, the bracts from the Palmer amaranth potentially that are adhering to this this lint and going to end up as a portion of the GenTrash. If we take a look at the confirmation of glyphosate resistance in, and you didn't leave me a pointer, did you? No, he didn't. But if you take a look at the confirmation of glyphosate resistance here in the southern U.S., basically what you see here, there's two major regions. We have the Mid-South, which for the most part now is pretty much just completely infested with glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. Is that one?
Yeah, just push the button there.
Okay.
Turn it the other way.
Okay. So essentially we have the Mid-South region here, and again, we're about to add some additional counties to this. I think Daniel Stevenson's going to add some here in Louisiana potentially, and for the most part, the entire Mid-South, Tennessee, Western Tennessee, Western Mississippi is now infested. Alabama's recently been added here, but the point is, if you take a look at the southeastern coastal plain, for the most part, the production region, we've got two areas here in the south that are pretty severely infested with glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, and the question is whether or not we're actually moving seed among these fields, whether we have pollen-mediated gene flow, seed dispersal, or whether or not these are just happening as unique cases of resistance. And I believe, to be honest with you, my guess is all of the above are actually happening. If we take a look at GenTrash and some of the uses of GenTrash and what people, just again, based on the literature and what people have used it for in the past, I mean, you have fertilizer, people are using it kind of as an amendment, soil additive, improve soil structure, organic matter, erosion. I even had someone at this meeting here, I think it was yesterday, I forget who the individual was, said that he applies GenTrash to his fields to try to reduce nematode populations in fields. So I wasn't aware of that, and I don't know if that's the case, if it actually does, but obviously it's being used to try to reduce nematode populations. But weed suppressive mulch, if you take a look, you've got this individual right here. That's actually a pile of GenTrash. They're going to place it as a flyer mulch. You see this in gardens all of the time. We're feeding some of this stuff to livestock. And even if I went and took a look, some individuals are actually taking this stuff and burning it, using it as, again, an energy source for combustion. I even saw where it's potentially being investigated is trapping the methane from this, using that as an alternative energy source. So there are some potential uses of GenTrash. The question is, again, I guess from a weed size standpoint is, how effective is composting? Because most of this stuff, or some of it's actually composted before it's sent out. How effective is composting actually removing the weed seed from these piles of GenTrash? And if you go back and look, there was some work done in Arkansas in the mid-70s and published in 1978 saying that essentially, if you And they looked at pitted morning glory, hemp sesbania, very hard-seeded weeds, and I was extremely surprised to find that they said it was completely lethal to all weeds, and they buried them in these packets. But they also noted that there was fungal growth on the packets. What they did is essentially took the packets and, like I said, placed them in there, and I'm not for certain it wasn't the fungi killing the seed, weed seed, as much as it was the heat generated from the composting. But that's what they report. If you go back and you look at the literature, Gordon and others, also some work in Arkansas where they were looking at the composting and different techniques in terms of composting. Some comments that he made in some of his work, and again, this wasn't a weed science paper, but he just noted that even with composting, there were commonly weeds growing on these compost piles. And he pulled some samples and even noted that there were viable seed found in these compost piles. Now, these may be, again, seed that are coming from plants growing on the pile. I'm not for certain. They weren't for certain. This was just a comment made in passing in this paper. But if we take a look at gin trash, one thing is by collecting gin trash, we thought it could give us essentially an indication of the most problematic weeds that were occurring in cotton fields throughout Arkansas and again, to some extent, Tennessee and Mississippi when you see the number of samples. And that's going to allow us to essentially develop some recommendations specific for those weeds that are there late in the season. And again, give us a better indication of which weeds are actually existing. And I really wanted to focus on this, and that's kind of help educate our gin operators or help them make informed decisions in terms of dispersal of that gin trash. Give them some indication of the actual weed seed content in there, especially, like I say, if we have potential to move a herbicide-resistant weed. So the objectives of this work were to determine the species, density of the weeds that were present in gin trash. I also wanted to take a look. We had a couple of sites where we could look at composted gin trash, composted for 1 year, 2 years, see how effective it was in actually removing the weed seed. And again, I surveyed actually 23 gin operators throughout Arkansas and determined the means at which they were actually disposing of their gin trash. We collected 453 gin trash samples. What Ken and I went and visited in Southeast Arkansas, personally visited several gin operators. We gave them 40 to 50 paper sacks, asked them to collect a paper sack full of gin trash every day the gin was in operation. As we spoke to them, they said essentially they gin a new farmer's cotton each year, each day. So essentially, it'd be a new farm coming through that gin each day. So we felt like give us as many samples as possible. As long as the gin was up and running during the fall, they collected samples for us. And we had 18 gins that participated in this. I contacted about 9 or 10 of these actually in Northeast Arkansas via phone. And again, called the ones in Southeast Arkansas. And again, we also went in and asked them about their disposal of their gin trash. How were they disposing of it? What were they doing following the gin trash coming out of the gin? We also had 10 samples from Mississippi, 5 gins from which these were collected. Trey Coger collected these, and Larry collected 10 samples here in Tennessee. So again, that would be 10 gins, one sample per gin. Not an exorbitant number of samples from Tennessee and Mississippi, but again, it does give us just a snapshot of what's occurring there. Again, we had 2 gins that cooperated with us, we just went out and collected samples from Taylor's Gin in Arkansas, where we had 1-year-old compost. This was about 1/8 of an acre of a patch of compost, 4 feet tall, 1/8 of an acre in size, where as it came out the gin, they took it to a site, they dumped it. Rainfall was the only moisture at which this compost site received. And again, it wasn't turned. It was never turned during the growing season. What was interesting, we saw several weeds growing on this. One in particular was Palmer amaranth, as well as a few other ones. But the grower's gin, as the gin trash comes out, it's actually on a conveyor belt. They have a moistening system where they moisten the gin trash. It goes into a pile. Every 3 to 6 months, they said they try to turn that pile to increase the composting effect that's occurring. We had a 1-year-old pile that we were able to sample from, as well as a 2-year-old pile. We collected samples from 0 to 1 foot in these, and 1 to 2 in in these composted piles. We also collected took temperature measurements from 0 to 4 inches, and then also from 12 to 16 inches, again, correlating to these sample depths here. We had a 4-inch temperature probe that we measured on that day. Kind of show you what we did with these samples that came in. These were all of the samples. Again, we had well in excess, by the time we looked at the composted samples, in excess of 500 samples. We filled up 2 greenhouses with these. We took a sample of the gin trash was in the bag, a known amount. We mixed that with a known amount of potting mix, placed that in these 18 by 14 inch trays, and we allowed it to sit in the greenhouse for 5 weeks, and we monitored the weeds that actually emerged from that gin trash and then quantified them at the end of 5 weeks. To give us some estimate of the quantity of weed seed as well as the species present. Now, kind of moving over into the results, again, these were 473 samples we had collectively across Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi, 453 of those being from Arkansas. We saw essentially 25 species. These were weed species. Cotton was also prevalent in a lot of these samples. But if you take a look, broadleaves, we had 14 broadleaves we identified, as well as 11 grasses. So we had a few more broadleaves than grasses. But if you take a look at this next slide, I think this is the tell-all here. If we average across each of these samples, we had on average 8,320 seed in our gin trash samples, and this is seeds per ton of gin trash. So approximately 8,000 seed per ton of gin trash, and that was present in about, grass seed were present in about 41% of the gin trash samples. About 9%, 8 to 9% of our samples had broadleaf weeds in them, and on average, averaged across all samples, we had about 2,500 seed per ton of gin trash. So a lot less broadleaf weed seed as opposed to grass seed. And again, I think this matches pretty well. Donnie and I think Daniel Stevenson was talking yesterday, like I said, when we had a producers roundtable, the fact that they really have tremendous problem with grasses late in the year. And that's one thing that's going to be extremely obvious here. We have more of a grass problem than we do a broadleaf problem late season in cotton. In terms of overall rank, if we just look at, again, the 25 species, the number one weed that we found was large crabgrass. 19% of the samples had it. 14% of the samples we collected had barnyard grass in them. 13 roughly for goosegrass. Red sprangletop, and this one was not on my radar, but red sprangletop was found in 8% of the samples. And here was the most common broadleaf weed we found. And I was expecting it to be a little bit higher than this, but still, that's a pretty alarming rate that 4% of the gin trash samples had Palmer amaranth in them, which ranked 5th overall. If you take a look at the average number of germinable weed seed, again, here's your ranking. Barnyard or large crabgrass, about 3,600 per ton of gin trash. Palmer amaranth, if you just go out and you collect gin trash and you collect a ton of it and you put it on your farm, you're going to be putting about 687, on average, 687 Palmer amaranth seed on that site. In terms of the most common broadleafs, of course, Palmer, I told you, was first. I'll just show you a few of the other ones. Cutleaf, ground cherry, 1%, and slightly less than 1% were pitted morning glory, eclipta, and prickly cider. I think one reason we're seeing pitted morning glory being less than 1% is the fact, again, that it has a very smooth seed. I don't think it's adhering to the lint as we pick our cotton, and therefore a lot of that seed's actually falling to the field. We have a lot more pitted morning glory in cotton, I think, than just 1%. But what you notice here, there's about a threefold level, a higher level of Palmer amaranth as compared to these weeds down here. Here's one of the samples. I will say, I don't know if Larry's in here, but Larry, this sample is one of yours. Thank goodness it's not from Arkansas. We did have some that did look like this, but this is one that Larry sent in. Fellas, this is actually Palmer amaranth. There is a large crabgrass plant, I believe, there, a couple of those. But for the most part, this was severely infested with, this field had been infested with Palmer amaranth. On average, I want to point to this down here. On average, if you take a look across all gin trash samples, if you just go and you collect a gin trash, a ton of gin trash, and you apply it on your farm, on average, you're applying 10,820 weed seed per ton of gin trash. Those were germinable weed seed. I'm sure there's a lot more in there, but over a five-week period, that's how many germinated. Again, I think can cause a serious, serious problem. Now, what about composting? Because a lot of people, well, oh, I've got composted gin trash. I spread it. Obviously, that's not going to be a problem. Here's one of my gins, Taylor Gin, that we collected samples. Again, these are seeds per ton. These are germinable seeds that actually occurred. We had four species we found in these at this gin site here after 1 year of composting. From zero to one is the yellow bar here. We see up to 67,000, almost 68,000 germinal Palmer amaranth existed in the top 12 inches of that gin trash pile after 1 year of composting. We did not have a lot of heat there. The heat, and again, I don't have these numbers right in front of me, but it was about 110 to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Once you got down to about 12 to 16 inches, we're talking 145, 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And I think that's the real difference in terms of why we do not see viable weed seed after a year of composting. We saw no viable weed seed at those lower depths. Growers' gin, we saw pretty much the same results in the outer 12 inches. Barnyard grass here was 7,000 per ton of gin trash. Large crabgrass, and here's our friend again, Palmer amaranth, still there in composted gin trash in the top 12 inches. Now, what's interesting here is this is a gin that was turning their gin trash every 3 to 6 months. They're turning their gin trash, but they still had, again, some of these weed seed in the outer 12 inches, and we did not find them at this lower depth. Now, what about two-year-old composted gin trash? Again, turned every 2 to 6 months, or every 3 to 6 months. The only weed that we found in this pile of gin trash was Palmer amaranth, and we found it at 4,000 seed per ton of gin trash. So some general observations that I had from this work was, at some of these sites, we had more than 400,000 seed per ton of gin trash. I mean, again, there were some of these cotton fields, obviously this cotton came out of, that were severely infested with weeds. You harvest, you take gin trash and you place it back on a field, you're going to have a major problem. We also saw that grasses were more of a problem in southeast Arkansas than they were in northeast Arkansas or Tennessee and Mississippi. And this was quite interesting to me is that I saw in northeast Arkansas and to some extent Tennessee, with the limited number of samples we had, Palmer amaranth was more of a problem in these regions than they were in southeast Arkansas. And if you go back to our maps of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, we see most of our glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth and Palmer amaranth in general in northeast Arkansas. So I think that matches up pretty well with what we're seeing. Now, what about disposal? I had 23 individuals that were willing to cooperate with us here and kind of tell us what they do. Some individuals are actually disposing of their gin trash in multiple ways, and therefore, if you sum these, you're going to actually see these sum to more than 100% because of multiple means of disposal. But 43% of these individuals are taking gin trash and they're putting them back on cotton fields, soybean fields, just putting it back on a field to try to get rid of it. And these may not be fields from which essentially the cotton was essentially harvested. Composting, 39% of it's sold or is given away as compost. I've just shown you composting is not effective. And this one was real interesting to me. 39% of it's being fed to cattle. What's interesting there is if you go back to literature and you take a look, there's actually been some work done with red root pigweed showing that cattle consuming red root pigweed, the seed readily passes through the digestive tract, and it's about 60 to 70% of it still viable after it passes. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if red root pigweed can pass, I guarantee you Palmer amaranth can pass as well. So with that, what I'm saying is I think we're moving. A good bit of this is being fed to cattle, and those cattle are being moved long distances. So we potentially could be moving this very well across state lines. Erosion control, I had a couple of individuals that were actually taking this and they were giving it to landfills. As landfills were being covered, they would actually place it on top of it to actually try to reduce the erosion at those sites. So some conclusions. First, viable weed seed does exist in the outer 12 inches of composted gin trash piles. We're not finding it at greater depths. But again, if you're taking composted gin trash, you're also getting viable weed seed is one thing that was quite evident. One thing is grasses appear to be more of a problem late season in cotton than broadleaves are. And gin trash disposal is definitely, one conclusion I have is gin trash is definitely one means by which we're aiding long distance movement of weed seed. And if we're moving weed seed, we're moving herbicide resistance as well. With that, I want to acknowledge the gin operators that gladly, like I said, allowed us to collect samples. Some of them collected samples for us, and they answered the questions that we posed to them. County agents, they also collected some of the samples, and they provided the contact information for each of these gin operators. And with that, I'm going to open the floor for questions.
We've got time for questions for Jason.
That was a large pile, and what they said they did there. Again, that was only at one of those gins. I believe they had a dozer there. He was in a very large pile, and they took that and they got on top of it and tried to take that was on top, move it to the bottom, and kind of push, make them another pile, move it over some distance, make another pile every 3 to 6 months. Yeah, and I'm not going to argue that potentially may be what's happening here. The point is, though, I don't care if it's coming from sites adjacent to the compost pile, but the point is the top 12 inches there has pigweed seed in it, has other weed seed in it, and if someone comes and collects that compost, that outer portion of that compost, they are also collecting weed seed and moving those to another site. Also, I would argue that any weed seed that you're finding or any plants, palm or amaranth, that's growing adjacent to that compost pile, again, came from numerous sites over a very large area. Oh, I understand exactly. You're just wanting to get rid of it, and that's what, yeah.
And we've looked at spreading it on the fields, but because of the pigweed and that problem, we've hesitated to get it out on a large area of our farms.
And like I said, I spoke to several individuals that told me they did not have issues with pigweeds until they had actually spread some gin trash on some sites, and now they said they had some sites that they just could not control the pigweed.
How long did
it varied from gin to gin. Like some of them actually have individuals set up where they're collecting the trash and disposing of it as immediately as it comes out of the gin, within weeks of coming out of the gin. I had one site there where gin trash was still sitting there 2 years after coming out of the gin. It differs tremendously from site to site. Yes. And that's one alternative. Again, I don't know what the cost would be. It would be essentially to try to take. I've seen some of these corn storage. When a couple of years ago in Arkansas, we produced a lot more corn than we could actually store. We placed it in these what I call silage bags and then stored it there. Is that possible? Could we place our gin trash in a bag like that and then try to fumigate it? Of course, the deal is when you say fumigate, methyl bromide has been scheduled to be banned for the last 6-7 years now, and of course it's still around to some extent, extremely costly, but yes, I think that's a possibility. Another possibility, again, I think, is to place it in a bag like that and add moisture to that bag and then see if you can allow it to ferment. Of course, you're going to have definitely a heating process that would occur in a bag type or a closed environment like that. So.
You mentioned viability of seed there at the past few counts. Does anybody...
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't seen anything on. Yeah. Oh, exactly. I'm sure it's in litter. So. Yes.
You need to look at it dry as opposed to get moisture potentially in solids.
Say that again.
Eliminate the oxygen out of it and it should let it burn.
Mm-hmm.
Jason?
Yes. I think you're exactly right, Larry. I think that'd be very interesting if you could talk these first of all, if we have any cotton gins left here in a few years. That's the first question. But if we do, yes, I think it'd be pretty exciting to go in and take a look, especially as we keep talking about the fact that Palmer amaranth is becoming more and more of a problem, and we have some idea in terms of the grass weeds here. And I guess my question is there something that we can do about some of these weeds? I know that Daniel had mentioned the other day in terms of Louisiana, brown top millet being a major problem down there. We didn't have any brown top millet in these samples here, but large crabgrass, barnyard grass are our problem weeds. And what can we do to try to address these issues in terms of late season grasses that we have in cotton? Or is it something really that we should be concerned about? I think the main concern I have there is not only glyphosate resistant Palmer amaranth, but we have a tremendous amount of barnyard grass in Arkansas that's resistant to other herbicides, and there's always potential for glyphosate resistant barnyard grass. We've talked about that some at this meeting here, and with 19% of the samples coming through having barnyard grass in them, boy, that would scare me if we had a glyphosate-resistant barnyard grass that we potentially begin to move like this.